This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Some of Chris Rock's comedy is so politically incorrect that political and social commentators have weighed in with their opinions on it. Rock appeared regularly on the program Politically Incorrect during the presidential campaign as the show's campaign correspondent. Tomorrow he launches his own late-night variety show on HBO. Each show will open with a topical monologue, followed by an interview, comedy sketches, and a performance by a guest musician. Chris Rock got his start on Saturday Night Live and worked on In Living Color. He co-wrote and co-starred in the film CB4, a satire of the rap world, and he appeared in the films Beverly Hills Cop 2, Panther, and New Jack City. He has a comedy album coming out soon called Bring the Pain. I asked him what got the biggest response when he was on the campaign trail for Politically Incorrect.
There's a woman, or a Republican,
I forget her name, some woman that was really ripping, the woman basically said that Bill Clinton was not qualified to be president because he was from Arkansas. And I thought, you know, who the hell is this lady? So I said, ma'am, with all due respect, you're the meanest bitch I've ever heard. And that got, you know. So I said that, and that pretty much got the biggest response. Even when I did Charlie Rose, he showed the clip. Like, this has been haunting me, or following me for a while now.
So, would you
have... And when I was in New Hampshire, I'd mentioned that it was hard for me to find any hair care products. That
right.
seemed to get a big laugh.
Would you have said that to the woman if you had to do it over again?
If I had to do it over again, I don't know. You know, I guess not. You know, when you're a comedian, it's like, especially me, I feel like the Hulk sometimes. I don't even know what I'm doing. Then when I'm not performing, I check to see if anybody got hurt. So if I knew what was going to happen, yeah, I probably wouldn't. But I never know what's going to happen.
You have a comedy record coming out.
Yes, I do.
That has a lot of the same material as your HBO special from a few months ago, which is called Bring the Pain.
Bring the Pain.
Great title.
Thank you.
Probably the most controversial part of this part of this, cutting right to the chase, is what you describe as the civil war between black people. In fact, let me play an excerpt of this sketch.
Oh, boy. Now, we got a lot of things, a lot of racism going on in the world right now. Who's more racist, black people or white people? Black people. You know why? Because we hate black people, too. Everything white people don't like about black people really don't like about black people. There's some shit going on with black people right now. It's like a civil war going on with black people. And there's two sides. It's black people and there's niggas. And niggas have got to go. Every time black people want to have a good time, ignorant ass niggas up. Can't do shit. Can't do nothing. Can't keep a disco open more than 3 weeks. Grand opening, grand closing. Can't go to a movie the first week it come out. Why? Because niggas are shooting at the screen.
What is the range of reaction, Chris Rock, that you've gotten to this sketch?
Wow, you know what's weird?
What?
It's been nothing but positive reaction. This whole special, the only negative reaction I've ever gotten from this special, and I'm not jumping on a bandwagon here trying to get, you know, famous, is Bill Cosby.
What did he say?
Well, he didn't say anything. He just wanted his... In the beginning of the special, I have a bunch of old comedy album covers flashing. And these are just guys I grew up with and I really loved. And it's Bill Cosby and it's Woody Allen and it's Flip Wilson and Dick Gregory and Pygmy Markham and Eddie and Pryor. And they're just like my heroes. And he wanted his album removed, so I guess he didn't like the special. But other than that, it's been nothing but good reaction.
Were you thinking about particular experiences you had or particular people you know when you wrote this?
Boy, again, it's like the Hulk syndrome. It's like, I'm not really thinking about anything. I'm just interpreting. This is like, you know, everything I said in that routine, my mother said, my father said, I heard in barbershops. It's not like I'm, you know, it's not like I invented anything, you know.
Help me
this
out.
Has been, this yeah. has been, you know, these views have been out there forever. Just nobody said it.
You know, I couldn't help but wonder, listening to it, if a white comic said exactly the same thing you said, it would have a completely different meaning, I think.
Yes, it would. Why would a white comic want to say what I said? Why would that ever be, in what context would that ever be necessary?
So what's the difference between you saying it and a white comic saying it?
I can say it. What's the difference between someone calling your kid an idiot and you calling your kid an idiot? It's a big difference. It's a huge difference.
Your
kid knows what you mean when you say it. Your kid knows you just mean he's messing up. When somebody else says it, boy, that's mean.
Did you go through a radical black consciousness period when you were in your teens?
No, you know, I didn't go through I was in my teens. That's like the 80s. So it's not exactly the most conscious decade or time. You know, I was bused to school as a kid.
Mm-hmm. From where to where?
From Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, to Garrison Beach, Brooklyn, and to Bensonhurst. And, you know, I was getting called nigger since I was like in the second grade. So I never, I was always in tune with my blackness, you know, from the time I was, you know, in the second grade.
Weren't there a lot of other people from your neighborhood who got bused to Bensonhurst?
There was like a contingent, about like five of us.
Five, that's all?
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, from my, you know, when I say the neighborhood, I'm just talking about like a block, like a two-block radius. You know, when you grow up like in a bad neighborhood, there's not a lot of venturing out. So my neighborhood was like two blocks to me. Then the rest of the neighborhood, I didn't go anywhere because anything could happen. My mother wasn't having it.
So how many African-American students would you say there were in the schools that you got busted?
In the schools, okay. I was like the only black kid in my grade a couple of times.
Wow, uh-huh.
I was the only black boy. And then there were like two black girls, three black girls for like most of my grade school. And the girls had each other. I was kind of like by myself. And I would have, you know, it's weird. Even though I would get, you know, beat up and, you know, all that other stuff. Of course, my best friend would end up being white in that same environment. Then he'd get beat up for being my friend. It's a weird circle of events.
So you think that contributed to your being a comedian because you were so alienated?
Yeah, I was alienated. And I had nothing else to do. You know, I always loved comedy, you know. I had nothing to fall back on. I have no real skills. You know, if I picked up a paper right now and, you know, went through the want ads, there's nothing I could get that would pay me more than minimum wage. So I loved comedy, got into it, was a little twisted. You know, my schooling had twisted me somewhat. And it really helped me out. I mean, I would say probably today, most black people, not most black people, but a lot of black people, you don't really experience racism hands-on. You always, like my brothers who didn't get bused to school, like they experience the effects of racism, you know, living in a bad neighborhood, you know, you can't get the cab, you know, bad jobs, all that stuff. But very few people get that, especially in the North, that, hey, nigga, you know, that in your face every day. You know, there's not a lot of guys my age that have been through what I've been through.
My guest is comic Chris Rock. His new variety show premieres tomorrow night on HBO. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is comic Chris Rock. How did you get your first comedy break?
How did I get my first comedy break? Let's see. What's the first one? I guess I was discovered, I hate to say this, not that it's a bad thing, it just leads to other questions. I was discovered by Eddie Murphy at the comic strip in New York about 8 years ago now. And he saw my act, liked what I was doing, and put me in this HBO special called the Uptown Comedy Express. It was on me, Robert Townsend, Arsenio Hall, Marsha Warfield, and Barry Sobel. And this aired about eight years ago.
Must have been pretty exciting for you because Eddie Murphy was one of the people you really wanted to emulate.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy was an idol of mine. I wouldn't say... I never really wanted to emulate his work per se. Like, I love his work. I just always wanted to do some other thing. I idolized him as a personality, mm-hmm. more so mm-hmm. than anything else. Like, wow, it's a young guy doing it. More so than the actual art part of it. But it's, you know, if I had to pattern myself at it after anybody, it's more of a Sam Kinison thing. It's like my comedic pattern. Like, really, I try to be Sam Kinison comedically.
What qualities of his? That in-your-face quality?
That in-your-face shock. Things that are said every day but never said on stage quality.
Give me an example.
When Sam was funny, just that whole go to where the food is bit. You know, this... I don't know. I just remember Sam Kinison when I was coming up was like the only guy that sounded new. Everybody else was kind of doing different versions of other guys. Kinison was like totally new. I mean, even Eddie did Pryor. Pryor kind of did Cosby, and you know, Jerry Seinfeld did Robert Klein. Everybody kind of did somebody. And Sam, I don't know anybody that sounds like Sam Kinison.
So what's an example of something that you'd say on stage that you think people would be afraid to say off stage?
What's an example? That whole black people versus niggers bit. The whole, anything in my, most of the stuff in my special probably wouldn't, you know, guys wouldn't say. A lot of stuff.
I want to ask you about a couple other influences of yours. Pigmeat Markham, what does he mean to you?
Just the timing, just the, I wasn't a huge Pigmeat Markham fan, but I wanted to put him on my album, on my special. I talked to a lot of, it's weird, I'm 30, but I'm like an elder statesman with the young black comics. So I'm always trying to get guys to listen to other guys besides Pryor and Eddie. So I just put Pig Meek and I put Dick Gregory up there just so guys can see that and go, oh, okay, maybe I should get that album. Maybe I should check this guy out.
Woody Allen, where does he figure in?
Wait, now that I'm older, Woody Allen's my favorite guy right now. Woody Allen, the only American genius we have. Just... By far the best writer, the best comedian, best director. I have an insane respect for Woody Allen. I wish I could just like have lunch with the guy one day. I don't even have to be. I wish he could just let me sit at the other table and let me overhear his conversation. That would be enough for me.
When did he start to interest you?
When did he start to interest me? As a kid. See, that's like one of the nerd things. Like all my other friends are like, you know, in the Animal House or Blazing Saddles. And I think Take the Money and Run's the best thing ever. I'm watching Sleeper on the 4:30 movie. Annie Hall. I mean, you know, I was that, you know, I'm the black kid who's dying to see Annie Hall. I was a weird kid. It's an odd chap.
Now, I have a question about your voice. Your voice in your onstage performances, in when you're doing comedy, is much deeper, louder, and rougher than your voice in conversation, which is higher and lighter.
Right.
Almost sweeter, if I could use that word.
Oh, thanks.
And I almost feel like, are you not comfortable with that voice on stage? Do you feel like you need a harder-edged voice to do your comedy?
Well, you know, it's... The money's on the line. It's like people are paying $25. And they want a performance. They don't want me. They want me to be better than me. I gotta look better than me. I gotta be taller, louder, funny. I have to be more. So
I mean, when you're on stage, it's kind of like being a woman, you know? It's like, put on the makeup, do the hair. You know, nobody wants me. They want Chris Rock. I'm just Chris.
so you got to put on a personality on stage.
Well, I got to be bigger than I normally am. I mean, at the same token, I couldn't walk through life acting the way I act on stage.
Well, right, without getting hit a lot, probably.
Right, exactly.
No, I meant to ask you, did you go to the Million Man March? You talk about it a little bit in your routine. Were you there?
You know what? I didn't go.
How come?
I should have went.
Did you think about it? Was it a decision to go or not to go?
Now, you know, first of all, the decision, I mean, probably the main reason I didn't go because I'm famous and I just...
Right.
I
don't really like being in big crowds when you're famous.
I really don't feel like being in big crowds.
Yeah. Look, there's like, Chris Rock.
Yeah, but there are a lot of other famous people that are more famous than me. But, I don't know. I support the Million Man March and all it stood for. I just, the whole repenting thing was like a little weird to me. Because it was kind of, the whole nation, a day of, the Day of?
Atoning?
Of Day of Atoning. It was kind of, in a sense, you're saying everybody's messed up. The whole race needs to atone. It's like, hey, and at the end they had this everybody, you know, raised one hand. I will never hit a woman. I will never steal. I won't take drugs. I haven't done any of those things. And at the same time, I don't think I'm a Superman. I don't think I should be exalted for it. So I felt out of, it was just a weird day for me.
Actually, you have something related to that that's very funny in your performance where you talk about people who brag, I'm so great, I've never hit a woman, or...
Yeah,
so I mean, great, and I take care of my child, and you say, yeah, you're supposed to. I mean, that's just a given.
Yeah, it's just, a bunch of guys, I'm going to take care of my kids. Okay, that's what you need. I don't have any kids. I don't have any kids out of wedlock. I don't have any children. I don't know. Million Man March was a weird day for me. It was a weird day because I was watching it on TV actually wishing I was there. But at the same time, there were parts of it that I knew why I wasn't there, so.
I have one last question for you. It might be...
Really?
Yeah, it might seem strange to you. What, did being really skinny, do you think, affect who you became and how people thought of you? Or, how you see yourself as a comic? Were you kind of scrawny as a kid?
I'm scrawny now as a man. totally. Being skinny has affected every aspect of my life. Every decision I make, everything I put on. Put it this way. Look at my stand-up. My stand-up, I have twice as many... I always say stand-up comedy and boxing are pretty much the same. You know, boxing is to sports what stand-up is to entertainment. Because it's just a guy out there by himself. And I perform like a skinny boxer. Where I don't have the ability... I don't have the ability to knock you out, so I have twice. I have you take my hour special and anybody else's hour special. I probably have twice as many jokes compact in it because I'm so in my size has me so insecure. I'm always working twice as hard. So, yeah, being skinny has totally affected me and totally, totally, totally weirded me out.
Speaking of boxing,
men are
did
crazy.
You did you get, did people fight with you a lot when you were young and take advantage of your size?
Totally, totally.
Did you?
And the only reason they don't do it now is because I'm me.
Right, you're famous.
That's the only reason.
Did you learn to fight?
When you're as small as I am, it doesn't really matter.
Try martial arts or anything.
Martial arts. Some big guy will just grab you and throw you down. What's the point?
Did you try to cripple your opponent with comedy?
I've just, stayed out of environments and situations where fights may occur. No drinking. Like, I don't drink because I can't fight. Wherever there's alcohol served, there's a bouncer because people get out of hand. So I can't, too little to be around guys that get out of hand. So I can't drink. Poor woe is me. I'm sure Woody and Spike think the same.
Right, right. Well, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, you can have him on your show and talk about it. A little self-help.
Yeah. That's why I love Spike, Brooklyn and Skinny.
Well, Chris Rock, I wish you really good luck with your new show.
Thank you.
And thanks a lot for talking with us.
Yeah, no problem.
Chris Rock's new variety show premieres tomorrow night on HBO. Here's more from his forthcoming CD, Bring the Pain. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Mary Fair! At the Mary Fair, boy, how did he get a ticket? It was a damn positive ticket. How'd he get it, man? Mary Fair at the Million Man Mall. You know what that means? That means that even in our finest hour, we had a crackhead on stage. You know I'm right. How the hell Mary Barry get his job back? Smoke crack got his job back. How the hell that happened? I mean, if you get caught smoking crack at McDonald's, you can't get your job back. That's right. They're not gonna trust you around the Happy Meals. They'll send your ass to Hardee's. Smoke crack got his job back. All I wanna know, who was so bad? Who ran against him? That they lost. Who was so bad they lost to a crackhead?